We're talking barbecue in this hour. And as delicious as it is, barbecue also has an unsavory past. It goes way back to when the Europeans were first discovering the New World. Some of those early Spanish explorers noticed that indigenous Haitians and Native Americans had a way of slow-smoking meat on a framework of sticks. And when they wrote home to describe it, those explorers called that barbacoa. That's the root of the English word barbecue. But if you notice, there's another root word buried in there, barbarian. Historian Andrew Warrens says that's not an accident. Steve Paulson sat down to talk with him about his new book, Savage Barbecue: Race, Culture, and the Invention of America's First Food.
Andrew, you sort of unpack the word barbecue, the etymology of this word. Where does it come from?
I think that the first occurrence of barbecue that we would recognize and connect with our own usage of the term is from the pamphlet 1707 Barbecue Feast by Ned Ward, which is the first piece I found which connected the word to, one, outdoor feasting, two, pork, pig, three, the kind of communal celebratory event outside the orbit of civilization, which it comes to be kind of celebrated as the 18th century wears on.
Tell me about this book.
This book was a massive surprise to me. I began this research as a fan of Zora Neale Hurston, thinking, as I embarked on researching barbecue, thinking that I was going to be thinking about the Caribbean, Florida, the American South. But what I actually came to realize, the more I kind of read into the archive out there, was the importance of this book, of Ned Ward's Barbecue Feast, Three Pigs of Peckham. One of the things that book does is it kind of propelled me back to my sort of home turf, if you like, back to the South London area that I grew up in. And it was a complete surprise to me to find that actually this guy, Ned Ward, who's this kind of idiosyncratic, eccentric kind of literary hack derided by the likes of Alexander Pope, actually is, as far as I've been able to find out, the first writer in the English tradition who makes that link, as I say, between barbecue, outdoor feasting, a kind of loosening up, a relaxation of the ordinary kind of conventions, a male-dominated crowd, an abandonment of cutlery, and a kind of a gorging, a kind of largesse enjoyment of feasting of outdoor cooked pork.
So what is this book? Fiction? Non-fiction? What is it?
It's ostensibly an act of reportage. He is a hack. He's a journalist going around to the various festivals and fairs that are taking place in London at that time, but is then producing the most fanciful, weird, wild and wonderful reports of them. So it's, I guess we would call them acts of fiction. It's almost like a kind of gonzo journalism, a Hunter S. Thompson kind of journalism for the early years of the 18th century.
So how does this book, The Barbecue Feast, figure into your central argument that the history of barbecue is interlinked with racism?
The Barbecue Feast is presented as an opportunity for the band of Englishmen to engage in a quasi-cannibalistic feast on Peckham Rye Common, you know, just out of sight of the London walls. There's a particularly nasty moment. It's a pamphlet of about 25 pages. Particularly nasty moment where the men are all kind of gathered with their knives at the ready, ready to sort of fall upon the barbecuing pig, where the pig, as it kind of cooks, as it browns, is said to start increasingly resembling the body of an Indian squaw. And so there's a kind of imagining of a kind of cannibalistic moment in which, you know, there's a bunch of American studies scholars, Philip Deloria, who would kind of have offered books to kind of help us understand the kind of phenomenon here more in the context of the American Revolution and of American culture. But that kind of imagining of cannibalism and of a play of kind of imperial fantasy is very much part and parcel of what, on other pages of the pamphlet, you know, sounds like quite nice food. It sounds like, you know, quite a pleasant thing to eat.
One thing that you do throughout the course of your book, I mean, you have these fascinating little anecdotes of where barbecue figures into popular culture. For instance, you talk about Andrew Jackson, a president in the early 19th century, and there was a cartoon of Jackson and what was referred to as the political barbecue. Can you describe this?
Yeah, this is Martin Van Buren is at the head of the crowd of, you know, it's kind of like creates a scene that's not unlike the scene that's imagined in Ned Ward's Barbecue Feast. There's the pork in the foreground, and then this motley crew of hungry men poised ready to pounce on the pig just as soon as it's ready. The difference with this cartoon is the meat that they're waiting for isn't from a pig, it's from poor old Andrew Jackson.
I mean, Andrew Jackson is actually on the spit. He is being roasted while these men are standing around, you know, waiting to eat him.
And it's a good example of, you know, that kind of the inauthenticity of barbecue in terms of its past, because you look at it and you think, well, it might not be a barbecue, it's a spit, but and yet it's called a political barbecue, which again attests to the sort of mobility that the term had, certainly in the antebellum period, if not afterwards. And so here, you know, as a literary scholar, obviously this is a kind of an opportunity that I couldn't quite pass up to sort of think about the permutations and the echoes that might lead us back to other kind of barbecue myths that I've kind of found in the archive. And there is a sort of similarity there between the political barbecue and those earlier portrayals. Mm. I guess the thing that's sort of emerging at that point is the tradition of the Election Day barbecue across the American South.
You meaning that, you know, on Election Day, people, you know, gather for barbecues, I mean, as a festive kind of occasion.
Yeah, you know, I kind of think of Robert Penn Warren's amazing book, All the King's Men, and, you know, there's a kind of late example of that kind of Election Day barbecue in that.
It's a food of the people, of the common people. I mean, it's not anything that the elites necessarily eat.
Yeah. Ned Ward, when he talks about his men going off to Peckham drinking rum, there's this sort of relief. You know, it's a kind of, you can just leave civilized London behind, turn your back on it, just chill out with your mates, have a chat, get a bit drunk, eat barbecue. You know, that idea, although it's rolled up with some really nasty kind of racial images, that's definitely a kind of one of the fascinations barbecue holds for Ned Ward. And I think that it's very difficult to disentangle the racism from the conviviality when you're confronted with such a culinary phenomenon. Mm-hmm. But there is that thing that, yeah, sometimes you might want to go to a Michelin-starred restaurant and put your best clothes on and have a range of cutlery in front of you and drink fine wine. And probably if you go to such an establishment, you might be on your best behaviour. But certainly from this point, from my point of view, from, you know, Leeds, from a British point of view, what American culture gives you is the alternative. And it's an alternative which you might 9 times out of 10 prefer, which is go somewhere that's going to serve you food where you can relax and you don't need to worry too much about the niceties of cutlery protocol and all of those kinds of things. And so I think, you know, when you say it's a food of the people, you know, I think that's really comes across loud and clear in the kinds of portrayals of barbecue that I was looking at for this book.
I have to ask you about one of the reviews that came out about your book, Savage Barbecue, by Andrew Leonard in Salon.com, said that this is either the most ridiculous book ever written about America's defining grassroots food or the most profound, or perhaps it is both.
Yeah.
What do you make of those comments?
Well, you know, they're kind of branded on my brain and I kind of recite them to myself just before I go to sleep every night. In a way, and this might be my own kind of permanent indoctrination into the academic system, but I kind of struggle to see what is quite as contentious about the assertions I'm making in the first half of the book about the etymology of barbecue, because I kind of think it's there, you know, it's there in the colonial archive. And I think it's almost a kind of matter of record that it's cannibalism. It means different forms of racism, fantasies about what so-called savages or Indians are up to outside of the range of kind of colonial power. And so I kind of think it's, as a thesis, it's actually a little bit more modest and also a little bit more empirical than Andrew Leonard suggests in that review.
I have to ask, do you eat barbecue yourself?
Yeah, whenever I have the opportunity, I eat barbecue. Barbecue here in Leeds is often thwarted by the weather. And when it does stop raining for long enough, we get out there and we kind of, you know, have some incinerated sausages and kind of wash it down with plenty of booze. And, you know, that's one kind of barbecue that I enjoy.
So when you are eating barbecue, enjoying barbecue with your booze, are you contemplating this history that you've outlined as well?
It depends who I'm with, what I've been doing, and what the atmosphere in the barbecue joint is.
Andrew Warrens is a lecturer in American literature and culture at Leeds University in the UK. He's the author of Savage Barbecue, Race, Culture, and the Invention of America's First Food. He talked with Steve Paulson.